an open course for emergency. 'Cause I've got to be free. Free to face the life that's ahead of me. On board, I'm the captain. So climb aboard. We'll search for tomorrow on every shore. And I'll try, oh Lord, I'll try to carry on.
Take her in, gentlemen. There she is, in all her glory, as promised. Our mode of transport to WrestleMania. The Kobashi. I told you. I didn't let you down.
She's a beaut.
Alan, is this a safe form of transport?
It's safer than my driving.
Okay.
Well, actually, my driving, as we've established, is very safe.
Just, I'm just thinking, like, are there any boys in the back?
We got a few boys in the back.
Okay. Just making sure.
Yeah. It's all good. Well, if you wanna come on board here, guys, I got some sandwiches and stuff in there. I got a surprise for you, Justin Nemo.
Uh-oh.
I know you were concerned. I know you're concerned about a boat and how we all weigh the exact same. And how one of us would stand in the middle throughout the course of the journey and not take a seat or a rest on either side. You're worried about that imbalance kind of situation going on.
That's
so
basic nautical physics.
So if you wanna look underneath that sail, it's being used as a blanket currently.
Well, let me hitch up the main one. Hang on. Ah! Oh my god!
I'm trying to get changed here. Please, just give me a minute. Honestly, for fuck's sake. Ow. There we go, zips up, right. Hi.
What the hell?
Oh my god.
I had Superfly Jimmy Snuka lined up as the fourth man on the boat, and now all I got is Mark Robinson.
Sorry,
Ed, what did you do with Snuka? Oh, threw him overboard?
Oh yeah.
Wow, right. Big splash.
Ten out of ten.
Whoa, we've already
played.
Oh dear.
3 minutes, 19 seconds in.
I don't know why I'm laughing at this true account of what happened. An explanation.
Well, Mark, you'll have to do.
I was going to say, I mean, I appreciate you bigging me up as a big surprise, but not to go into any sort of Mukigana statistical analysis, but I'm pretty sure I'm like the least listened to guest on your show. But hey, I'm sort of about the same height as Amo, so I guess I work as a good kind of counterbalance.
Alan, you had Mark in the brig of this ship since we were on with him, say, 3 years ago?
For the quiz?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck me, that was a while ago, wasn't it?
He's been in boat jail this whole time.
Have you guys not been on? Because I know Mark's been on the show a good few times since. But...
Well, I weren't on the road to WrestleMania last year.
You haven't been on any shows with Justin or Amo before?
Since the quiz, not that enough. I mean, I've met Amo since then, and that was fun.
Hanging around with you guys for like a whole weekend, and about halfway through, it was like, yeah, this is their first time meeting each other. And I just twigged.
We were like old pals.
And it felt natural. It was good.
I've spent
I
so much time
natural.
With both.
After a while, I suppose it felt acceptable.
I had spent so much time in different meeting friends of the wrestling internet trips with both of you, but never on the same ones at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of merged you two in my head.
It's fine. We were too busy watching other people reenact the main event of WrestleMania 17, so, you know.
And Kobashi versus Misawa.
Yes.
A couple of times.
Which you christened the ship, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
The SS Kobashi.
The Kobashi, it's as you can see, it's good firm construction, like the man himself. It's
solid.
I wouldn't say that anymore.
Well, yeah, yes, that's true.
I heard the head was all backed up. The head is the toilet of a boat, guys. High five. Yeah.
I'd say this is championship material.
Personally. Sure is. The boat is a she, oh, yes. As all boats are. Mm-hmm. She's like Kobashi. She is a main eventer in both circles. She is, as I said, built from a good construction. Maybe has had seen better days, but still standing tall and still getting about, and it's going to be good enough to take us to WrestleMania. Like I think it would be if we got on Kenno Kobashi's back and had him walk us to WrestleMania, but I still stayed at that mode of transport, and he wasn't going to be available, so we went with the boat instead.
Now, what's interesting is that, as we all know, ship knees are a common form of bracing in boat building, so are the knees of our ship completely fucked up?
I didn't look into it. That could be a problem. I guess we'll see. Maybe we'll run into issues later in the journey and we can blame it on that. And then you can in turn blame me. But I brought sandwiches, so it's all good.
I hope you appreciate it. Now, you had me fly across the Atlantic Ocean so I could sail back with you. I hope this is all being compensated.
I think if you look inside that one brown bread sandwich to your right, Justin, you'll see you've been consummated. You've been compensated quite handsomely.
It's another sandwich right inside the sandwich. Thank you, Alan.
You're damn right.
Per diem.
So yeah, that made it worth it. And also, you're not going to WrestleMania. So when we get back to America, we're just gonna ship you back to Pittsburgh in a car.
Oh man, I'll walk the plank.
Mark's not going to WrestleMania neither. Neither's Amos. So I'm having both of them swim back. So really, it's not that bad for you.
We were just going on holiday together.
Yeah.
In New Orleans, or are you going somewhere else in America?
Just sort of land and
around.
Just see what happens first, I guess.
No return plan.
Well, America, it's a big place, you know.
That it is. Montana, I guess, then, yeah?
Sure, why not?
Justin, what's in Montana? It's fucking big. I was looking at it on the map recently. It's huge.
Yep.
You don't hear much about it, though.
Well, it's just vast landscape.
Someone should do something with that landscape.
You want to?
What are you suggesting?
Yeah, real estate or?
I don't know. Just put something there.
Like what?
I also,
I don't know. Make use of it. A golf course. Dana White would love that.
I should warn everybody, a bit seasick already, so if you hear me sniffling or coughing, I'm trying to dive for the mic when I get there, but I'll try.
Okay, well, we're moving anyway, guys, so if I need to...
I have two horns on this one.
Do you have a tugboat wave or file, surely? This would be appropriate time.
There's a fantastic picture idea for the show.
There you go.
Can I handle some in-house business before we jet off? I mean, I know they've dropped the anchor. I mean, lifted it.
Yeah, go for it.
I inadvertently, in our last program with Todd Martin Esquire, in my brain, in the recess of it, you know, you're trying to entertain, you're trying to come up with stuff. Through no fault of my own other than just mine, I stole a joke from Eamon Dalton. Which was then repurposed to new fame on the Todd Martin show, whatever it's called. And
did you hear Todd Martin show this week?
No.
When he helped the old lady pick up the glove?
Uh-uh.
Fucking spectacular.
What a gentleman. Anyway.
What did he do?
He was in the middle of a rant, and then all of a sudden he just goes, excuse me, ma'am, is this yours? And Brian just lost it. Brian, fell off his chair, and then Todd came back and just goes, I've lost my train of thought.
Wow.
So chivalrous. Anyway, but I wanted to apologize. I took the Bellator joke just because I said it real fast, wanted it to be heard, and then after the fact it was like, no, that's a Dalton original. So I think as per the code that we work with, you get to slap me directly in the face for one stolen joke.
Well, that's okay. But, you know, for every 10 jokes of yours that I steal, you're allowed to steal one. So.
Oh, okay.
It works out okay.
Oh, the exchange rate with the euro.
Yeah, exactly. We're getting fucked, man.
Speaking of getting fucked, actually, Alan, I have one more thing I have to ask you.
Oh, no. What are you doing after the Limp Bizkit concert?
I got a letter from a fan. Our listener, James Kalin in Regina, Saskatchewan. And this is true.
Home of where Bret Hart won his first WWF title.
All true. It may be pronounced Regina. I don't know. And this is not...
Did someone just laugh because Regina sounds like vagina?
That's not necessarily why I laughed. You can't prove that.
Continue, Justin.
This is a real letter from January 24th, 2014. He wants to know, how did Alan not come up with the porn tag team name Men on a Missionary?
Oh yeah, that's a drop ball.
Yes. So I told him I'd take it straight to the source.
I will take that one on my shoulders. That's my faux pas.
I don't think missionary's on the shoulders, is it? How would you even calibrate?
Well, you have to be really, really, really long. Never mind.
DDP yoga.
you threw in a mention, and I wanted to leave some of the non-wrestling talk for later, since we've started it so much. But you did mention it there. I'm going to Limp Bizkit on Tuesday after work, going from my corporate-y finance job straight to Limp Bizkit. I was planning on hoping to have a no uniform day, as I like to call it, requested for that day, and to wear my Limp Bizkit t-shirt into work. But instead, I think I'm just going to have it under my shirt, and at 5:30, just jump from my chair up to my desk, just rip my shirt open, and start
turn your baseball cap around,
rattle my keys and say, "All right, partner, you know what time it is." And then all these people jump out from the filing closets and just be like, "New, new, new," start dancing, and I'm like,
3, 2, 1, burn. Is that Crack Addict or Roland?
Oh, they're all the same. So yeah, going to Limp Bizkit in the Olympia, which is a really
intimate venue.
You're on this boat.
It's an intimate venue. It's a very chandelier-y kind of
opera. It's not chandelier-y,
kind of.
But
is it not?
No, not quite.
It's an opera-y type place, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it has like balconies and little...
Yeah. Is it like a theatre venue?
It's quite fancy.
Huh. Yeah. Because if I want to think of a word to describe Limp Bizkit, fancy is the first word I'd go to.
Yeah, they've been known to be. But one of the awesome things about it is that DJ Lethal, no relation to Jay Lethal, when we were talking about this during the week and Sarah was saying DJ Lethal, I was like, why does that sound familiar? Say it again, DJ Lethal. It's like, Jay Lethal. Oh, wow. I wonder if that's where he got his name. I'm sure it is. But DJ Lethal, I guess, is on the outs with Limp Bizkit.
No.
He no longer...
There's a beef.
Yeah, there's a beef or something,
man.
I guess. And there was an announcement that like there was going to be a DJ Lethal kind of session concert thing on in a different venue right after the concert. So Sarah was like, "Oh yeah, yeah, they must be back together, squashed your beef or whatever." And I was like, "Oh okay." Then we looked it up, and apparently they haven't. And what he does is he just goes around following them and just coining in off their concerts by doing shows right after their shows. And getting the crowd to go from their thing to his thing.
He's like the Dragon Gate to their WrestleMania.
I just see.
Jay Lethal doesn't work Dragon Gate. could have at least gone on Ring of Honor. But that's not the big concert news of the week over on the shores. Justin, I asked you this when you were getting a glass of water earlier, and you didn't hear me. But I was curious. Are you familiar with the work of one Garth Brooks?
I'm more of a Chris Gaines guy, but sure.
Have you heard about Garth Brooks?
Yeah, yeah.
Tickets and concerts in Ireland in the last week.
Mm-mm. Do tell.
He announced three concerts in Croke Park, which hold 80,000 people. And the three concerts, 240,000 tickets, sold out in 90 minutes. And then, 4 days later, they decided to, or a week later, they decided to add another date. And then they said, fuck it, we'll add another date. So two more dates, and those tickets sold out straight away. So 5 by 80, 400,000 tickets? Gone.
Garth Brooks, man. He's back.
Fuck,
relevant.
Fucking hell.
Don't tell Dave Meltzer. It just feeds into his whole... Oh, no.
MC by Matt LeBlanc?
So, yeah. That's been quite the story over here for the last week and a half.
What's going on? About
how mental that is and how they want to leave Dublin for those 5 days. Well, all these people who probably don't get out much.
Garth Brooks sells 400,000 tickets. Meanwhile, Limp Bizkit is in the Olympia Theatre. The world is broken, Alan. It's broken.
Oh, I know. 400,000. It's mental.
That's half Dublin, essentially.
Yeah, it's going to be, I guess, a lot of people coming over from different countries and stuff.
Well, when marquee acts are in the same area, there's always a lot of buzz, a lot of rumors. Will they show up at each other's gig for a big duet? Collaborate, play together. Springsteen and the Stones, Bob Dylan and Elvis Costello. Garth Brooks joining in for some nookie?
Unfortunately, Garth is June and Limp Bizkit is this Tuesday.
Shit.
So maybe it'll just have to, I think, One Direction are around the same time, so maybe we'll get One Direction.
Oh, man.
Which, Amo, okay, so they're both in the same venue, just both in Brooks Park. So, Amo, Mark, which would you less like to have to, Mark, you know Dublin a little bit, so which would you less like to have to venture around Croke Park and town on the weekend of the One Direction concert or the Garth Brooks concert?
Well,
I don't need to be asked, frankly.
Trying to make it in and out of the stadium. Think
oh, the stadium.
That. Oh, it'd be awful.
It'd be fine. Listen, the Garth Brooks one would be way worse. It'd be all these men in cowboy hats and stonewashed denim. Small waistcoats. No, can't be doing with that.
You're not a fan?
Not a fan. Meanwhile, One Direction, that'd be great. Glow sticks and stuff, it'd be cool.
I don't know, there's a level of high-pitched squealing and screaming that I don't
that
think...
That Garth Brooks brings, yes.
Yeah.
Those men just let loose.
Actually, I mean, I've been sort of pulling the strings behind the scenes of this show as I try to get more and more of you accented types on. I want to form my own Lou Pearlman-style boy band, One Direction. I got 3 out of 5.
He was great. Sons of Anarchy, by the way.
Lou Pearlman?
Yeah.
Maybe think of different Lou's Pearlman.
We're thinking of different Pearlmans.
Ron
Chopin. Ron Pearlman.
Anyway, but yes, we got Mark in the heartthrob role. We can finally start selling records, which is to say downloads, which is to say torrents.
You're aiming low, I have to be honest.
Someone tipped me off that in the request section on one of the torrent sites, there had been requests for my show. I was delighted to see that.
Oh.
Not just because I've seen my show up plenty of times on the torrent sites. So like,
what were you doing there? What were you doing there?
I was scoping out their great graphic design that they have there. It's just fantastic.
What?
Look at that.
I was looking for the latest Ice Ribbon show, and you know it.
Ice Ribbon. I don't know which is. Anyway,
work for Web Sheriff, right, Alan?
I work for which?
Web Sheriff. The guy who makes sure that protects all the copyright property and shuts stuff down.
I'll get him on the case of this damn request for my show. But anyway, as I was saying,
Scotland Yard. Continue.
I've seen my show like on torrent sites loads. It's like it's always funny. But seeing it actually requested is I found just hilarious because like getting put up on the site is one thing. Anyone can put it up. There, people are just going to download whatever. But the actual request of someone specifically wanting my show, I just found what I was like, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? It was all the year
show, obviously.
All the year in review shows from January, I guess. But silly them, don't they know there's one more to come?
Yeah. And they could have just requested, they could have just asked me. I would have given it to them. If anyone wants the shows, I'll give them to you. It's fine.
I'll provide them with a tape cassette of the shows, which I have this always recording on tape cassette as well. Let's talk wrestling, guys. Fuck, people are gonna
let's
be.
Do it. Come on.
We're 25 minutes.
Who's driving this shit?
Oh, I snorted right into the mic with my sniffles.
We're taking turns. Amo, tack.
Sorry.
Tack.
Sorry.
Was it not also true that this was the like you know that Japanese island where they were not aware that World War II ended, and so they were fighting World War II like into the 70s? Was it not true that the SS...
Who were they fighting?
Anyone who tried to take on the Emperor's crown, really. Just missionaries.
Like
speaking of men on
a
missionary.
Seal swims up to the island and they just, like, kill it dead.
Seals, Navy SEALs, all manner of SEAL. SEAL the, scar-faced singer. But, what was it? Oh, yeah, was this not, the Kobashi had been for the last 12 years doing unauthorized Bruise Cruise voyages, right? They weren't aware that WCW had gone out of business. So the Bruise Cruise has been going on this whole time, and we're on.
I may have struck a deal with what's his name? Lee Marshall to get the boat for a good race.
Man, well, maybe Jimmy Hart's on board.
Unfortunately, I had to change the name when Lee Marshall had it. It was called the Weasel. Anyone who used to watch Nitro just fucking loved that joke. The network's going to be awesome when we get Nitros on there. I can't wait to watch all the old Nitros. That's going to be sweet.
I have some questions, actually, about that network.
Want to hit that first, then we'll go into Royal Rumble talk?
I just got a couple, now that you mention it. They're mostly about...
My question for the network is, will you buy my subscription if they block European credit cards?
Oh, we're going to be like...
I need a U.S. I need a U.S. What you call it? Surrogate.
In court.
I figure with, like... anyway. Just continue with your question.
Oh, you know what? As it turns out, I accidentally deleted all of them. Whoops. Oh, wait, here's one. Will Crispin Glover of Back to the Future be on the network?
I'm lost.
Great actor. All right, so we'll take that as a no.
Should I edit that out?
We don't know. Might be. Unknown.
Were you trying to continue the that shtick from 2 weeks ago?
No. Nope. Crispin Glover. That's all I got. All right. Finally, piece of business. Here then are the six final porn tag teams that I came up as a thing.
Just tying up all his loose ends before he set sail for a few months.
I need
just like leaving the wife and kids, telling his last few jokes, just everything he needs to get wrapped up in a neat little package.
I have a super bad feeling about this, so I need to settle all my affairs. Affairs? Yeah. So, for James, the six missing porn 80s tag teams from the Christmas episode. Number six, the Tart Foundation. Number five, the Cream Team. Number four, the Whore Foreskin. Number three, the Cum Erection. Number two,
oh my God.
Number two is the team of the Total Package Sex Huger and Barry Windham. And finally, the SummerSlam 1988 main event, the Mega Blowers versus the Mega Sucks. Thank you. Goodbye.
Oh,
bravo. Bravo.
Wonderful.
Now let's hit the 7-10 C's. Keep rowing, 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 rowing.
Oh, God. I'm just completely, I don't know. I don't know. I'm blown away by these high sea winds. If we were to form a tag team out of the two of us on this voyage, would our team name be the Seamen?
Yep.
Yes. Yes, it would.
Mark, make four. You agree?
Sure. Why not?
We're all in agreement. The Seamen it is. The other two will have to come up with a name for themselves.
Oh, that's fair. That seems like well-tread. I'm assuming that you covered that joke when we did the Letter C show at some point, right? Probably.
I don't know. It's pretty high-end material. I think it's the type of thing you want to think of. But let's
dive right in, and no pun intended.
Oh, hey, if we keep up with this all this non-wrestling talk, we'll be getting in trouble.
This will be like one of my shows, so let's carry on.
Yeah, how about that Chelsea?
Yeah, I need to talk to Jack about that.
Great things for the career of Desmond Wolfe.
Yes.
Actually, she did terrible things for the career of Desmond.
This is true. Gave him that secret age.
I was gonna say, damn it, beat me to it. I was rationalizing in my mind. Is this an okay joke to tell? Oh, just beat me to it. Don't have to worry about that.
It's fine now that everyone knows the truth? Question mark.
Justin, I can tell you're in a talkative mood, and I'm gonna just let you roll. You got Royal Rumble to talk about. You were there, so my first question for you to get you going is: were you booing Rey Mysterio?
You know, I thought the whole thing was just very disrespectful to the boys, and it's really not the place that, just kidding, I thought it was hilarious.
Did you boo? Did you boo? I know this is a taboo question. Did you boo?
It was Taboo Tuesday, and so 2 days prior, yeah, I did. Was there
just immediately everyone started booing, or was there a few, and then everyone was like, oh, fuck it, we'll boo as well, because it's the cool thing to do?
It was more of a cresting thing throughout the show. Matt Forestine, friend of the show, asked me ahead of time, do you think the audience will protest as some of the other crowds had done if things don't go the way they want to? I thought that was an actual segue question. Oyerstein then asked me ahead of time whether I thought the crowd had the potential to sort of run amok with the show as some of the previous Raws had, because it was coming off the Seattle one in December, and then really the big Daniel Bryan symphony at the end of the Wyatt family angle in the cage was a very moving moment, and I wasn't sure because Pittsburgh is sort of a notoriously not super exuberant crowd, so I've certainly been to a lot of mundane shows heat-wise with them. But when I got there, even before the pre-show started, everyone was doing yes and chanting Daniel Bryan. I kind of figured, okay, these are my people. We're all on the same page here about the way we feel things should go. And then, the Bryan and Wyatt match had surprisingly strong heat. Not that they didn't deserve it, but by Pittsburgh standards, I thought, man, they're really into this this wrestling match, which is not exactly common for the old Console Energy Arena. And he asked me before the two last matches? Did I think there was some civil disobedience in the air, maybe? And I thought, for Cena and Randy, there definitely would be, and the Rumble would depend on the layout. And those were famous last words, because then as soon as the bell rang in the world title match, the Daniel Bryan chant started, and the boring chant for the first headlock takeover.
Yeah, they didn't give them much of a chance, to be fair. But
they worked a good match, I thought, but it just, you know, they brought it on themselves.
I have this sneaky feeling that they're going to have a really good match on Raw this week.
Maybe a less, a more welcoming crowd.
Where are they for Raw this week?
LA, Staples Center.
I could see getting CM Punk'd, though, now that that's the thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really, especially, like, if it was fired, it would be, it'd be all about, like, okay, yeah, sure, go on, but, like, quit.
I think they just mean they like CM Punk and they wish he was around.
Yeah, but fucking he left. You should be going to CM Punk's house and chatting WWE. I want him to go back. Please, Chan, please come back, like, at the guy's house, literally.
I feel bad for Batista because this whole Brian thing, it's like a lesson in not understanding your own psychology. The whole story there, apparently unaware they've been building since August, is that they stole the belt from him and said he wasn't good enough to win it back, and then he just didn't. So people are sitting around waiting for them to pay off that angle the way they always do, which is, in many cases, the persevering hero enters the Royal Rumble and through much hard work wins. So when they announced the Bryan Bray match, it just seems so transparent for him to overtly, like, flying in the face of logic, say, well, I mean, we all know you're only allowed to wrestle once, and because the Harper and Rowan are in the Royal Rumble, we should have a singles encounter. I'm not interested in the Royal Rumble, because that would screw up the intended reaction. So people were a little antsy about that, and then a couple days later, maybe, is when PW Insider and Dave put out the fifth match of the intended card, which was Bryan against Sheamus, and then, yeah,
and it was the night of the Rumble. I remember being there, like, at about 10 o'clock my time, which would have been, like, late afternoon, early evening over in America, and the odds just swung crazily. Batista, who had just been clear favorite the whole time, his odds got, way worse, would you say? I guess when odds get further out.
Longer?
And Daniel Bryan, yeah, longer, and Daniel Bryan's got shorter and shorter. Daniel Bryan was the favorite there for a while. It just all happened really quickly, and everyone went crazy over it, and then Undertaker started dropping as well, and it really looked like something different could be happening at that point, but obviously,
well, is there much, just as much of a chance that somewhere someone was influencing it, so Batista's odds would become really long, so then they could put in however much money because they knew Batista would be winning.
Ooh.
But they would be having to put all that money on Daniel Bryan to influence those odds. It would have been coming out even anyway, I guess. I'm sure there would have been some kind of a net manipulation there. I don't know how it would have worked. But yeah, it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility.
The same finances that led to the economic collapse in 2008 played in small scale. I think Mark's theory is dead on, and people need to be held accountable for this.
The only thing that needs to be held accountable.
What is?
Sorry, I thought Eamon's line would be funnier than mine, but I was just saying the only thing that needed to be held accountable was Batista's ring gear, because he's sort of fake MMA shorts and skinny legs and wasn't screaming star to me.
I think he needs to wrestle in the skinny jeans.
Yeah. Take the Corey Graves approach. I like it.
And the denim jacket. So I enjoyed his denim on denim this past Monday.
you want him to go reverse Flair when they started making Flair wrestle in a shirt. Batista will have to start wrestling in his jeans now.
Yeah.
He's saying less isn't more.
The Bryan Bray Wyatt match, I thought was fantastic.
Yep.
I thought it was a really different match for WWE. It was super hard hitting. They were kind of bludgeoning each other a little bit. Very, very stiff, very intense. Came across like a real fight, a real valiant effort from Bryan. I loved Bray winning clean. I thought it was definitely the highlight of Bray's run so far and took him to a new level. Nothing but great things to say about that match. And as far as the great pay-per-view openers, I think it's definitely up there on the top of the list with the likes of like Bret and Owen and I think Ray's first match at WCW, a few other kind of things that were kind of touted as these great openers in wrestling history. Yeah, it was fantastic. I loved it. Mark, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, this is the kind of match that Bray has really needed since the get-go. Like, the whole Ring of Fire match at SummerSlam was just not really sort of the best environment to put him in. Other than just, it's a gimmicky match for a very gimmicky wrestler. And since that point and up until the Rumble match, even though he'd had a few matches here and there, you didn't really know, are they really going to focus on him as being a wrestler, or is he going to be the mouthpiece for Harper and Roman? But this was the match that sort of really put him at the focal point as, no, yep, he is in fact very much, you know, a serious player as a wrestler and not just now. And it's the kind of match that, there was nothing that they could do really that wouldn't, Daniel Bryan wasn't going to come out of it any less because he's that over at the moment, but it was done in such a way that he was still, a valiant fighting babyface, and White comes across as a monster, and just there's nothing but positives, and it was just a fantastic match as well.
Yes, I think that for two reasons. One, the match was so good, and two, they know WWE sort of psychology as to what happens if someone loses in the opener. No one was that upset about him losing the match either.
Yeah,
it was only as things.
I think it's just because everyone figured he was going to be in the Rumble.
Right.
Yeah.
It was, and then as the night went on, people sort of got more antsy and more nervous. You get up to 18, 19, 20, and it's like, is it really just going to be the match everybody predicted as when they put it, which was Punk goes to the end and get pulls out and then Batista wins? Surely there's more twists and turns than that. But no. And, yeah, we were displeased. Sorry.
Amo. Hey. You wouldn't have been watching the Royal Rumble live or shortly after it happened. But I imagine you were hearing about all this talk about all this stuff that went on, and for you, mm-hmm. what were you kind of envisioning this to all be? What did it come across like to you?
Well, unfortunately, for your little thought experiment, I did watch it live.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit, I've just fallen overboard in shock.
So yeah, so I was just booing in my bedroom.
Did you enjoy the? I'm actually curious. Did you enjoy the Daniel Bryan Bray Wyatt match? Did you feel it was something kind of a bit different?
Yeah, I just thought it was a really good match. I don't watch a lot of matches, and I was like, yeah, this is definitely one of the good ones. As you say, they were hitting each other very hard, and I didn't really know much about Bray Wyatt. I'd never seen his finisher. It's called the Bloody Mary or something.
Sister Abigail. Sister Abigail. That would be a great finisher name.
Okay. Sister Abigail's Kiss, John. Sometimes he throws that in.
Okay. That was very...
Michael! They are Rob Axel.
No, it's not! I disagree inherently for no reason. Michael! Daniel Bryan should or should not join the Wyatts, depending on what you just said.
Do you watch the Clem Layfield stuff that I keep getting suggested I watch on YouTube?
I'm not up with that one. It's a new JBLACS plot.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar either. But, yeah. I don't know. If anyone's been watching and wants to let us know if it's worthwhile, maybe we should do well. Yeah, so any other thoughts on the Rumble itself, Amy? Or any other, actually, I'm curious, any other sort of characters or people you saw on the show that took your interest, or maybe you found to be quite shit, or anything?
There was someone in the Rumble I had never seen before, but I can't remember what his name was.
Alexander Rusev?
Yeah.
Most people hadn't seen him before.
Who's he?
He's an NXT Bulgarian man.
He's from Bulgaria?
Yes.
Does he know Hristo Stoichkov?
I have met every Bulgarian I've met, I've asked that question.
What do they say?
They haven't said they've met him, but they all like
him.
That's
cool, okay. Is he any good, this Rusev?
He's a good enough big man, agile, athletic. With a bit of experience, he could turn into something.
Okay.
Yeah. And he's got a girl with him now.
Who's the girl?
Lana!
I guess it's Lana.
Archer. Me and Ziggler get it.
That's cool. He was the only guy I didn't know. I didn't know the New Age Outlaws were back. That was interesting.
What did you make of them?
Well, they seem no more New Age than they were back then. I'm not exactly sure why they're New Age.
Yes, we finally reached their age. Now they're just outlaws.
Now they're just aged outlaws. I would say old age outlaws. Ha, ha, ha.
I don't even technically at this point they would be classified as outlaws.
That's true.
In-laws?
Part of the establishment.
Exactly.
John.
I want to talk about the outlaws here a little bit and the tag team division. Tag team division, as we talked a lot about on the Year in Review show, was something that 2013 was a real big, good part of 2013. The Shield belts, then the Rhodes with the belts, and now it's gone on the Outlaws, and at the start of the Outlaws run, I was digging them being back, and their title win I thought was really good, and it was a really good pop when they won, and it was good stuff. Since they won the tag titles, I haven't really been into it. It seems the reactions are less and less now. They're still trying to do the babyface opening with them, which, because it's been a few weeks, as I said, less and less reaction. And also, they're like quasi-heels, but they're doing this, and it's kind of not really... The crowd seem confused at how they're supposed to react to these guys, and I think they've lost the kind of freshness that they had when they first came back.
The Outlaws, they've that intro, they've always done like that, and I remember Road Dogg was doing a shoot interview once where he said that, hey, yeah, we'd come out and the crowd would be behind us and we'd do sort of the promo at the start, and then we'd either say something called the match would begin and we'd be the hills again, and that was fine in 1999 when everyone knew the shtick, but it's 2014, and I think that's part of the problem.
What I would have liked more for them is, after winning the titles, I would have liked them to have been just full-blown assholes. Because Road Dogg can be a great asshole. I would have liked them to really kind of up the ante with the heelishness coming off the Rumble. And I would have liked to have seen them inserted, instead of doing the rematches with the Rhodes, I would have liked to have seen them inserted with the Usos and have them really just kind of bully the Usos, because the Usos would be guys who you could kind of like have heels bully and you'd kind of get behind them and feel bad for them and want them to kind of stand up for themselves, and so they're that kind of character. So I would have liked to see them go that route. Maybe really lay a beating on the Usos and just like this kind of like veterans just beating the shit out of young guys kind of thing. Backstage, in the ring, whatever. Just lay a big beat down on them. Build up to Usos getting a tag title shot at the Chamber and have Outlaws win, and in kind of, not a huge screw job, but like, ah, poor unlucky Usos. Or Usos. Everyone's being mistaken for Russo on this show so far. Instead of just a bad bit of misfortune for the Usos in their loss. And the outlaws just, again, amp up the cockiness. And all the while, you don't have them like linked up directly to Triple H, but you have that kind of thing lingering in the background of that they have this link to the Atari. And don't beat those over the head with it. Just kind of have it lingering in the background. And then eventually, I guess with Mania, with the whole kind of so many people to get in the card, you do some kind of tag four-way, which I still think they could very well do, and have the Usos come out on top and get their big WrestleMania title win this year. I was thinking of them winning the titles next year with it being in San Francisco, but I think they might actually be more Florida boys than San Francisco boys, I want to say. It's not, and also I think the sweet spot for them getting their big title win is sooner rather than later. I think they've got to the point now where I think it's almost time to give them their big moment in the sun.
I think that's going to happen. I'm almost sure that the Outlaws have the belts to transition them to the Usos. The catches are, for one, I don't think anybody wanted to see Cody and Goldust break up, or, you know, which they haven't yet, but seems to be on that way. And two, Real Americans had been doing good work and could have pretty easily been the heel team just to segue the belts there rather than the Outlaws, or even maybe the Wyatts. So, yeah, I think the Usos are going to get the belts. I don't know if I'd really care for this Outlaws run in between.
Was there anything else on the Rumble, Justin, that you particularly enjoyed from a live experience before we move on to the current outlook and where we're looking for Mania?
I have, although a second thought also occurred to me about tag teams is if the Usos win the belts, hasn't every other tag team breaking up right now? So who are they going to wrestle? Rhodes, Shield,
Harper and Rowan.
I suppose it would be probably maybe a good time to bring the Ascension up if they're going to try and do that.
Yeah, I feel like if you bring up the well, I don't know. I think the Ascension and Harper and Rowan would kind of be stepping on each other's toes a little bit, but you could do it. I feel like there was other teams. Maybe there wasn't. I guess
Real Americans are breaking up. The
half of them are breaking up in the last week.
Yeah. So, tag team division all got jealous of one another at the same time.
Yeah, jeez, I didn't even really notice that happening, but I guess it did. Well, that's a shame.
Easy come, easy go.
I guess Miz and Ziggler are going to be an angry, disgruntled man team.
Oh, joy.
Mark, you sound like you have some feelings about that.
The whole thing's pretty ridiculous. Like, everyone went completely crazy about the Ziggler promo and stuff. But I feel like Ziggler still has a chance to do something. Everything involving the Miz at this point is just utter death. And I don't see any upsides to him other than the fact that he is marrying or married Sue Marie. So it's about as much of a positive he's got. I think he needs to go away for some significant period of time. I'm not feeling this at this point.
I'm very much with you on that opinion on The Miz, and I'd say there's no one who's less of a fan of him than me. but like I, for whatever reason, I just think the idea of when I hear disgruntled angry men tag team with him and Ziggler, the vision I have in my head is actually something that doesn't sound particularly unpalatable. I could kind of see them working well together. I think it would be a fresh unit. We haven't seen much of these guys kind of interact with each other ever really in their career. I'd like to see what kind of chemistry they have. That would be the key. If these guys do have great chemistry, you could have Ziggler hide or compliment Miz as far as Miz's weaknesses and where Miz is annoying and maybe not as good in the ring. Having Ziggler there to be half of his on-screen presence, I think, well, yeah, it may drag Ziggler down if your idea of Ziggler is being this top like main event singles guy, but he's not there right now, and this would at least be something to give him a purpose. And I definitely do think it has potential to make Miz a lot more palatable if they play it right. And again, the key thing is if they have charisma with each other. I'm not going to say it couldn't go horribly wrong, because it has all the makings of something that could go horribly wrong. But I think there's a chance for it to be not the worst thing ever. So
Miz teaming with a great athlete with abs worked before.
Big Show?
Yeah, John Morrison.
Oh, yeah. I was really thinking there.
But on the flip side of that, or kind of this, sort of along those lines, of they've done the disgruntled thing with him and Truth before as well.
Yeah.
I kind of liked that until they just kind of gave up on it. Yeah, like when they did that initial run in the Helm of Cell, that was pretty
decent. Yeah, and then, you know, The Rock happened, and that was that.
That was that weird period of Kevin Nash, Triple H walkouts, all this kind of weird stuff. That was a lot of unresolved stuff. I put that in the file with the like Vince McMahon deaths, the surprise child Kennedy weird stuff, all that kind of stuff that kind of never really got resolved. I put that kind of period in there with the whole Triple H walkout deal. Yeah, that was strange, but
there was a Kevin Nash appearance and a Triple H walkout just last week.
I guess there was.
For me, basically, I would rather see Dolph Ziggler do anything than do nothing, and he's been doing nothing for so long that whatever it takes to get him beyond put over a heel clean in 4 minutes on Raw.
It's a fair
shot. I'm for it.
Yeah.
I even like the idea from the F4W board, which posited Miz and Dolph and Ryder as a babyface 3MB counter faction.
I don't like Miz as a babyface, and I think...
Remember when he turned? It didn't take, I guess.
This is something I wanted to talk to you about, Alan, at some point, and actually Ziggler as a face, and because... Did he turn face by winning the title the night after Mania? Was that an official face turn, would you say?
No, he turned face when he lost the title to Del Rio and got kicked.
So up until that point, would you classify him as had being a tweener?
He was a heel that got cheated.
Yeah. Do you think that
he only wrestled babyface.
Yeah, but do you think that just wouldn't work in the long run because WWE don't really know how to book a tweener?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Like, because the only tweener, and to be fair, looking at tweener in general, the only one that really seems to work that kind of currently would be Okada. But even now, he's, I guess, he probably, well, he
Okada's all of Chaos are
yeah.
They're not like you've guys like kind of Yano and Yujiro, who are kind of like do heelish things or whatever, but they're babies.
Yeah.
The crowd loved these, especially the top Ishii, Okada, and Nakamura. But, those guys are 100%.
And then the thing is, just with Ziggler's character, it's indebted to being a heel, or at least being a heel that's cheered. I don't find him particularly convincing as a babyface. Like, he's got the athleticism. And the working style to be a babyface, but just his character and just the way he is, and just even his entrance music, it's all just, I'm a show-off, and I'm a prick.
I'm just a sexy boy.
Sexy boy!
It's kind of depressing, even before the big semi-notorious interview on after SmackDown last week. I don't watch the WWE app for the second screen experience, but it seems like every time Dolph has an entrance, the announcers say, he was just on the app saying he's been on a bad run, and the turnaround starts tonight. I wonder why he would even bother to say that if he knew he was going to go out and lose, other than I guess he doesn't care. But repeatedly through December and January, it said, Dolph was just on the app on the second screen experience, and he says, the turnaround starts now.
Does I want.
He got a big pop in the rumble, bench. Though. It was the right kind
he
of
did. Crowd. Yeah. That was a return, though, wasn't it?
Yep.
I want to talk about our where we're looking as far as direction for Rumble, the big matches, what's locked in and what is
actually,
not.
Actually, there is one last thing to talk about from the Rumble itself.
Okay.
That would be Roman Reigns.
Mm-hmm. That is a thing.
He did the
best, most well-handled thing in an important thing in WWE in the last 5 years? I say yes.
Yeah, even if we want to go just on the Rumble match itself and the way he was booked in that, other than the actual way he was eliminated, which I think could have been handled better, I
don't know. I think it was fine. It was a quick thing. Which didn't make him look weak. Because I was trying to think of ways to do it, and I think that was, and I think his reaction was perfect. His reaction to everything is perfect. He has got such amazing instincts and does all the little things just so well. Like I called big things for this guy like a good while ago, but I've just been seeing more and more, which makes me even think I may have underestimated him back when I sort of said he was going to be like this future mega star. But yeah, his reaction I thought was perfect. He just kind of like had this just kind of pound the ground, shit, fuck, I let that slip kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it was the perfect reaction. It was just kind of a slip, like it was trumped, he said, he just maybe moving too quickly, got reversed, and out he went. So the wily veteran, I was hoping that my thought ahead of the Rumble was that it might come down to those two and they could do this kind of sort of veteran cool guy that the crowd love against this young up and coming cool guy that the crowd are starting to love and have it really work for giving Roman Reigns the rub from Batista. But I think so much of the focus was gone off those two guys. But
yeah, Justin. Yeah.
I again apologize for that. It was because Batista got booze when he came out because people saw him as the obstacle. Hey, remember when I asked you and Todd how long it would take Batista to get booed? Did any of you have 0 minutes and 0 seconds? So, Punk. When Punk was still around, people were kind of less upset because he would be a quasi-acceptable alternative, although there still were like a cascade of boos post number 30 when people knew by the math that this wasn't going to happen the way they wanted it to. And then when Punk went out and it was down to like the stereotypical tri-hoss finish that people would make fun of WWE for, then it really rained down. But then when Sheamus went out, Roman Reigns became such a champion for the protest vote. It was. I felt really bad for Batista, who doesn't look good. He mistimed a lot of weird moves, but they brought him back so terribly. He's been like set up to get booed in what is supposed to be this big heroic return. Like, what? How can people even? For one, I think I don't know if it was accidentally leaked and then they decided they had to bring him to TV, or if they were just going to announce him on TV as coming back on the Raw before the Rumble. But if Batista had come back as a surprise in the Royal Rumble, a Daniel Bryan free Royal Rumble, people would have been like, whoa, it's Batista. I'm surprised.
I got a question.
Yeah.
I got a question on Batista. They have not been shy at all about talking about how he's friends with the Authority.
Mm-hmm.
And his original appearance, his first thing he does is come down to the ring, give Stephanie a big hug, and slap hands with Triple H. And I have a question in that, is it, are they clearly doing that to telegraph a heel turn? Like, are they very much picturing this guy as a heel and this the seeds they're planting? Or are they that oblivious that they don't think that people think of the Authority as heels right now? Could that be possible?
Yeah, or the idea that everyone knows their friend should supersede the idea of doing an angle that makes sense? Because yeah, Orton has to keep the... I mean, if they knew Batista was coming back in the fall, and they had this, oh, it's going to be huge. Randy will have all this steam as heel champion, and then Batista will come back as a conquering babyface. We'll put Randy over not only Daniel Bryan, but also have him beat John Cena twice to set him up for Batista. So if you're going to do that, shouldn't Batista come back and say, like, oh, yeah, I know we were in Evolution and we're boys, etc., things of that nature, but I hate the way things are going, and you know who was the real guy who was the best? It was me, and I beat you, and I beat you, and I'm sick of it, and I'm here to change things.
Yeah, it would have been so much better. Now it's just, like, I don't get the whole authority thing right now as far as what their characters are. It's very confusing. I don't know where the way they're portrayed is a product of their egos and where it's just them trying to get over something. I don't know where one ends or one begins and the other ends. It's very strange to me, and I think they need to get that sorted and get that in line. I was way more happy with that in September when they were completely just over the top obvious heels. Mm-hmm. It was a lot more palatable than, I've used that word a lot today, but it was, now it's just confusing, and when they come out to open a show, it doesn't kick things off on a good note for me when they start a show, and I really kind of want to see the back of them, or I want to see them establish what they are and bring an end to the story.
I think there are little seeds being planted around, like, and again, it's annoying that it's not on the television show, but every single week they're having Triple H doing a sit-down interview with Michael Cole, or the one week where they had the soon-to-be Mrs. Robinson, Renee Young, and they... And every week, you know, Michael Cole asks him questions. And this week just gone by, Michael Cole hounded him on a few things. And Triple H, this was the first time doing the sit-down interviews that he got really agitated. And at the end of the interview, he sort of went over to Michael and was kind of whispering, and there were some bleeps to presume he was swearing or something. And that was the first time that he'd really lost his cool in that kind of environment. So I don't know whether this is them actually doing some sort of actual long-term booking, and then sort of when you look over the last 6 months, it'll all make sense by the time we get to Mania. But then there's obviously the fact that they've had to change a few things because of the whole Punk situation, and now the focus is now Daniel Bryan, but they kind of, both of them are two sides of the same coin really at this point. I think it's like a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B, in that there is some sort of long-term plan, but just by the very nature of trying to do long-term planning sometimes, there's things that are being changed around that don't work with what was originally planned and that kind of thing, if you get what I'm saying?
I do.
I first of all want to give a shout-out to my boy Eamon Dalton, who hasn't gotten to speak for a long time. Secondly, I think Mark is exactly right. I think...
Did I hear a toilet flush in the background?
Sorry about that.
how were the boys in the back, Amo? Amo, how were the boys down
this
there?
This toilet can handle anything, let me tell you.
Hey, those sandwiches packed a punch.
Well, yes. And more.
Guys, is this a pun about buoys? Because I can't tell. Is it? Because I love it. If not, then it's just adequate.
It was at the start. Now yeah. I don't know what we're talking about.
I thought so. I had to confirm. I didn't want to make it myself, or else then you'd, by all rights, get to slap me again.
Yes, well.
Mark,
save that for choppy waters.
Alan has a joke about choppy waters. Make it, Alan, please.
Woo!
There you go. Anyway, I think...
Also, Kobashi.
Mark is right. I think Hunter is going to... Because the whole stupid angle, he's been playing plausible deniability, right? Like Scott Armstrong or having the Wyatts attack Daniel Bryan. And then I think once we clear Elimination Chamber, he's going to go full-on evil and finally lose it. So Mark is right, but I still feel like that whole presentation has been really, really detrimental in the meantime. It's been I mean, I'm all for...
Definitely agree with you on that one.
Yes. He's right, though. It's coming to a head, and he's going to, you know, snap and be like, that's enough, grrr. But it's been unfair to Batista, and it's been unfair to Randy Orton, too. Like, I don't want to see that match, except, like, out of curiosity to see what would happen. But I'm all for it being torn down if they don't change it to a three-way, and I guess we'll probably get into your what all of your preferred Daniel Bryan scenarios are. But so Batista, in what we just talked about, instead of coming back as a babyface, he's what everyone fingered him as, which was the guy who's doing Daniel Bryan's storyline, or at least was maybe before things got shaken up. And Randy Orton, the whole angle and the big SummerSlam turn was supposed to get Orton back, now with his wellness program redemption policy thing in the clear to headline again, and get him back as a top heel like he was in 07 to 09. But he hasn't even come close to that. I know everyone isn't that into Randy Orton as an act, and he won Most Overrated in The Observer and all that.
He had a great moment on SmackDown this week.
Which one?
Apparently, there's talk that maybe it only aired on the app, but it was included on the international versions. But he was in the middle of the match with Christian, and he had like beaten up Christian on the outside, and he just got on the microphone and starts talking about what a bad mood he's in and how the weather's terrible. And he's here in, I forget the name of the place, but it's somewhere that was 6 hours from St. Louis. And he said, it takes me 6 hours to get back to St. Louis, and the weather's so bad, my flight got canceled. And they won't even let me charter a jet to get me home, so now I have to stay here in, Maryland. Completely agreed, frothing at the mouth over having to stay the night there in that place.
He's had flashes. Like, he did a Raw promo a couple of weeks ago backstage, and
I thought his Rumble promo backstage was excellent.
Well, there was a Raw a couple of weeks before that where he just sort of just said, I was just like, the whole crowd can kiss my ass, and like the crowd popped for it, and it was, I don't know, it was a side of Randy we haven't seen a lot of, where, not to say just he was charismatic, but it was outside of the typical monotoned, serious Randy Orton-style promo. There was a little bit more life to it. And I was like, yeah, I'm feeling this. I want more of this. And there's been moments of it, but not to the degree that I'd like.
Yeah,
I like the more crazy, paranoid, and on edge he gets, the more I like.
Yeah.
I think some of his acting has actually been underrated in this. I just think it makes no sense for him and Triple H and Stephanie to always be fighting and never be on the same page and the same angle before every pay-per-view title match, where first Randy goes, what? You put me in a match? A wrestling match on the pay-per-view? Why? Why would you do that? And then they're like, well, I don't know, Randy. We're not so sure if you're the champion. Maybe we don't want you to be champion.
It's just the laziest type of storytelling and writing they could do for this angle.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you wanted a strong heel group with Randy Orton as like an evil champion backed by all the powers, then I think what you said, Alan, it was reasonably strong in September. Since then, he built up all this non-heat because he is the setup guy for Triple H and constantly infighting with them. And then, so now all of that accumulated evilness is going to be blown off by Triple H's other friend. Like, is it any wonder that everything that's happened crowd-wise has?
I have to ask, is anyone at least perversely curious to see what a Batista-Randy Orton match in front of 70,000, whatever, sort of hardcore wrestling fans at WrestleMania will be like?
Very much so.
No, because if it's just that huge, just complete defiance crowd, I don't know. I've seen it before. I don't find it particularly interesting or shocking.
I don't think we'd see it anything quite like what it'd be like at that stage. Like, obviously, we've had the Cena Rock matches where they've been pro Cena or pro Rock or sort of anti either for whatever reasons, but not to the degree that I think they could take, you know, do with that
match. Your point being, we haven't seen, like, the Raw after Rumble crowd on, like, the full Mania.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, yeah, I guess, yeah, I suppose I am a bit curious to see how much that portion of the crowd is watered down by fans who are just there, who are like, hey, it's WrestleMania, Batista, Randy Orton, big stars.
There's part of me that would like to see WWE be stubborn enough to say, fuck it, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah, like, I have no problem with the match.
I have a problem with the
really?
Match.
You don't?
I really don't. Okay, so I was going to, because we've been kind of negative on the show so far with various talking points, I wanted to get into something positive, being the Shield and the Wyatt family, but we'll hold off on that for the moment. And since we're on the topic, Mania card and the top matches, I am totally fine with them sticking with Orton and Batista. Because
a beacon of controversy.
I don't want Daniel Bryan. See, okay, I'm a very organized person. When I have an idea in my head, I generally don't stray from it. I like things to kind of go in the direction they're going.
Could you apply this organization to the show?
No, I could not. This is my outlet for my...
Like the shipwreck.
Wait,
in the horizon, see that you've lit the beacon of controversy.
when I think of, okay, this is when I'm in January and I hear a direction for Mania, and okay, all these guys are clear directions, they're caught up and they're put in different programs, this all kind of fits together. Okay, that's at that point in my head, I'm like, I like things to stick, I can't think of things being completely, like, basically the thought of anything other than Brock versus Undertaker right now just makes my head spin. Yeah, it's like, oh god, that changes everything.
If they put Daniel Bryan into this match, this isn't exactly Undertaker Sid, where it's changing every 5 minutes up until the main event.
That's true. That is the one, to me, that is the one, like, change that can be made that doesn't completely kerfuffle everything around. Okay. But my problem with that change is, I don't like triple threat matches. Not a fan. Occasionally they can be good, occasionally they can be great. But for the most part, on average, I would rather see a singles match than a triple threat match. And I would definitely rather see a singles match between Daniel Bryan and Triple H, which I think could have awesome heat, and I actually think could be a really good wrestling match between two guys who are really good wrestlers from different styles. And I think Triple H would be... I think he is respectful enough of Daniel Bryan. I think he... I think he appreciates Daniel Bryan enough that he would allow Daniel Bryan to really have a large amount of influence over how that match goes. And I'd be really curious to see Triple H in that environment and how he would work within the context of that Daniel Bryan style match. I think that's an awesome one-on-one singles match, which is guaranteed to have a great crowd reaction. Daniel Bryan being put in the Batista Orton match, yeah, it gets him in the title picture, and I guess that's the be-all and end-all for a lot of people. They must have Daniel Bryan going for the title and winning the title, or else everything is against us. To me, who is a fan of just, I want to see the best wrestling card possible, I don't think, well, within the context of telling good stories, obviously, but at the end of the day, I'm going there from one side of the world to the other and paying a lot of money for a ticket. I want to see a really good wrestling card on that night. And I don't think Randy Orton versus Batista versus Daniel Bryan is going to be... I think that's a mess of a match, to be honest. And I think Daniel Bryan has great moments in the match, but for the most part, I think it will be kind of a herky-jerky, not a very smooth kind of a match. I don't think it's in Batista's best interest at all to be in a triple threat match, because he's probably quite limited right now, coming back at 44 years of age. I think he's better off in a one-on-one environment. And then also, if you do that, then what does Triple H end up doing? Will Triple H be put in the match like with Sheamus or someone, which probably won't be the most satisfactory thing?
Fuck Triple H at this point. So surely
he's gonna be on the card. You know he's gonna be on the card. So I'd rather see him in what I think is a good match for Daniel Bryan, and I think is the best possible match for Triple H, and that's their one-on-one singles match. And Daniel Bryan could win that and go for the title going forward. But then you're left with Orton versus Batista in a singles match, which, as long as it's not put in the final slot of the show, no, I don't think they would. I'm fine with that being the title match, and like I don't care about like which match the title's on the line in that much. It's like, okay, it's a title match. It doesn't make that much difference whether that was the title match or whether that's a match with nothing on the line. It's still those two guys wrestling each other, and they still get the same reaction. I think that's the best. For those two guys, I think that's probably the best slot is against each other, and I think you tell the Evolution story with it. I think you don't have them go 20 minutes. I think you get those guys out there for 12 minutes, 14 minutes maybe at max, and it could be not awful. So I'm fine with them sticking with that. Triple H Daniel Bryan is the replacement for Triple H Punk, which is a match that I wasn't near as high on as I am Triple H Bryan. I think Triple H and Punk would have been a clash of personalities. I think Triple H probably gets on with Daniel Bryan and respects him as an individual to deal with a lot more than with CM Punk. And all stories coming out about Punk's departure and Triple H's feelings seem to kind of go along with that. And Triple H and Bryan did have that one big blow up but last year, but that does sound like something that from all accounts, Triple H may have gained respect for Bryan from. It was kind of the way that the story was told. I think they'll be much more cooperative. I think the Triple H Punk match could have been potential to not be good. So, yeah, I'm happy with that match, happy with Batista Orton. Then you're left with Cena versus Bray, which is a match I'm super high on. I just picture that being like Cena Umaga on a much bigger stage. It probably wouldn't be as good a match because Bray is not the worker yet that Umaga was in 2007, but he's getting better, and I think he's the perfect style of wrestler for Cena. Cena, and I'm a big John Cena fan, and I hate The Rock in the ring in his last few runs. So seeing Cena in main events against The Rock the last two Manias has been a real bummer for me, because I want to see John Cena in a match that I think is a good match for John Cena at WrestleMania. And I think this is maybe one of the best matches on the roster for John Cena right now. I can't wait for that. And then Undertaker Lesnar, which I mentioned already, which to me, fuck, put that on last. I'd probably go with the Batista Orton match, third from the top. Let the fans get whatever out of their system for that. Then you do Triple H, Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan get his big win. Everyone's happy, and then with everyone happy and have all their controversy and chanting and everything out of the system, then it's okay. Let everyone forget about all that shit. Now we're going to have the fucking epic match of epic matches, Undertaker versus Lesnar. Everyone just shut up and love this match and do the opposite of shut up and make a lot of noise. So that is the ideal way I see the WrestleMania card go. Rant over.
Do you want to go first, Mark, or do you want me to?
The floor is yours.
Tear me apart. Is that what you're going to say?
I agree with most of your logic there. I just think you really underestimate the degree to which Batista versus Randy would be rejected. I think.
But if it's it could be rejected. But worst case scenario, if it's completely rejected and everyone shits on it, you give them 12, 13 minutes, and it's a small portion of the show, and it keeps that rejection away from other things on the show, and everything else can be, it's like, so what? If one thing falls flat in the show, I'm okay with that.
There's that, but it's also going to be, what is it, 5 or 6 Raws in between of marching them both out there to do these angles, and I think the crowd is just going to get on them more and more. I don't know if that's the momentum you want going to the show.
I think there's enough different things. And, like, you can, in building up, you can kind of move them into different parts of the show depending on the reactions they're getting, put more and less of a focus on them depending on what kind of reaction they're getting. And there's different things you can do, different kind of angles you can do. You can put them in different kind of matches with different people. I think you've enough tools at your disposal as far as the build-up. It doesn't have to be a complete flop unless you just book it badly.
Well, I'm fine with either one. Like, Daniel Bryan versus Sheamus for the 2 days it was in the plans, I thought that was logical based on if you had to lock those other four matches in, which I never understood really why. Bryan versus Sheamus, like, going for redemption, and I assume probably Sheamus going with the authority and playing his role as Triple H's suck-up guy. Yeah, that made sense. I just don't think the story of the last 7 months should have had Daniel Bryan in a match fifth from the top. So I'm happy if he ends up in the title match or against Triple H. I have zero, like, I'm scared of the Triple H politics. Like, yeah, Triple H is going to beat Daniel Bryan clean at WrestleMania. If you think that...
I can't envision that happening. I don't know what the source was.
There is no source. The source was... The source of that, I can tell you, was a Mike Johnson article where he said, some of the wrestlers are not excited about the Mania direction. One of them said, do you really think Bryan would go over Triple H? Yeah, right. So that became, the current company plans are for Triple H to go over.
Yeah, no. I can't see that at all. No, I would be in disbelief if that happened. I don't think for a second that's happened.
If they're programmed, you can feel free to have a panic attack about Triple H being condescending or one-upping him or going off script on interviews and doing his snarky character instead of his full heel character. But, you know, he loses all the time as a heel to peak storylines at WrestleMania. And everyone was obsessed with the 30-second pedigree with Booker T 10 years ago, but he tapped out clean to vanilla midget, no charisma, Chris Benoit.
John Cena, Batista.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he'll peak a storyline just fine. Like, I don't know what he might do to protect himself, like whether he gets distracted or has some kind of out, or if he'll just want to have a classic match, because he certainly has a shortage of them in the non-Undertaker category at WrestleMania. So, yeah, I think you're maybe in too deep a little bit if you think he's going to use his evil politics to pin Daniel Bryan, who he obviously hates.
My only dispute I'm going to make...
Amo, tack.
What?
Sorry. It's the only sailing term I know.
Oh, you sounded very stern.
Please,
Eamon, what do you want as the main event of Mania?
Paige against me.
There we go, sorted. We're done. End of discussion. My only dispute I was going to make is you saying that Batista is not really going to work in a triple threat match, because I dispute that because of the... World Heavyweight title match of Unforgiven 2007, Rey Mysterio, Batista, and the Great Khali. Had a very good triple threat match.
That was 7 years. Would you say Khali, Rey Mysterio, Batista, a very good triple
threat match? They had a very enjoyable triple threat match.
Wow, if you dig that one out, I don't remember it at all.
They like Russian dolls.
But I will say, I agree that if they're gonna do a Triple H match, I would prefer Daniel Bryan over CM Punk, because the last time they did Punk Triple H, wasn't that good. And yeah, I think that.
Yeah, geez, I actually forgot that even happened in coming up to that conclusion. Well, maybe it had some subconscious influence on me, but yeah, I forgot all about that match, which was kind of something.
Yeah.
With Triple H paranoia retrofitted as Triple H pedigreeing him clean and winning, and not three heels beating up both guys. Not that I don't think Punk shouldn't have won that match, but still, it just Triple H is in people's heads.
He's always in people's heads. That's where he needs to be at all times.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're saying that, you know, if they just put Batista and Orton on and they just have a 12-minute match, and maybe it's the Mark part of me thinking, well, it's the heavyweight title match and it should at least be somewhat important, and Batista and Orton, as far as I'm aware, have never had any sort of match on pay-per-view or otherwise that has been of any note or interest. And I can't imagine this one would be any different other than the fact that they've got 70,000 people screaming, "We want Divas."
I don't think they've ever had a pay-per-view.
They have.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm like...
You'd be the man to
it's
know.
It's around the 2008-2009 period, but I know they've had one, maybe, at the minimum.
Just the one?
Yeah, I think it was in Legacy, Randy, and faced Batista. Didn't he, like, win the title with a tricep tear and then vacate it the next night?
Yeah, because I think that was around the time he was supposed to turn heel originally in, like, his 2 year span of turning heel, but
yes. Yep.
Never quite happened.
Big Dave's turning heel.
Also, if you're skeptical about Batista in the ring, I think rather than him getting crossed up in a triple threat match, you could hide him in a triple threat match.
That is true. I thought about that as I was saying it. It was like, yes, you could hide him, but then what are you left with? Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton. And yeah, they had a kick-ass match this week on Raw, but it's Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton. It's what we've been seeing and giving out about since September. So.
I will say the one thing, when you think about, like, in terms of when is the right time to do anything in wrestling, when is the right time to push a guy, when is the right time for a guy to win anything, this does seem like the one occasion where they could hold off Daniel Bryan winning the title, because it does seem like there is no peak to him and his popularity at the moment. I certainly don't think that peak's going to come anytime soon, unless they just all out bury him between now and Mania, which obviously won't happen. So really, my only wonder is how they work Elimination Chamber, and I suppose it's pretty kind of where we'll end up going to at some point in this conversation, and how they book him in that particular match.
Exclude the Shield from this, because we're going to get to them now in a minute, but Justin, we always kind of, when we're looking at the WrestleMania card and feeling things out, we're always looking at the undercard and trying to, there's always one guy or maybe two guys that we're really looking out for, trying to hoping they get that good spot that we envision for them. And usually it doesn't come to pass, or it does, and then whatever spot it is lasts 5 minutes. This year, who in the back, who are you looking there this far out that you're kind of hoping is set up for something good on Mania, or maybe a pairing that you're quote shipping for?
Oh geez, I can't even think of a good reason to have like a throwaway 12-man tag match cut to 6 minutes due to overly long Hulk Hogan promos.
Oh god, yeah, Hogan. We'll save that talk for another week when we see him show up. I still, until that actually happens, I don't believe it's happening.
I think
I know it's happening. I don't believe it.
In the post Money in the Bank match WrestleManias, I think the undercard has been so raised, RAIZED, no I, either way. Now I just root for people I like to actually make it on the card. I don't expect them to have any kind of match. I mean, you had a 6 minute Hell No versus Team Ziggler match last year, so I'll be happy if, say, Dolph gets on this WrestleMania. Cesaro, too, who wasn't on last year's.
It's weird when you look back to, like, 2003, when, like, Shawn and Jericho, like, fourth match, have a 25-minute match, then you've all these, like, fairly long matches, and it's like, how did they manage to kind of get that much time out of things back then? It's like, it's all those fucking video packages really do add up.
yeah, oh, you know what? Because Dolph, I certainly have a lot of sympathy for, and Christian, who has missed, like, every WrestleMania due to injury forever, I hope.
And Rey.
Yes, yes. Maybe put them all in a match so they can be in there. Have them all wear Rey masks and set the record.
I always think of Rey for that, but Christian's a good point. What was the last Christian Mania match?
It was in a Money in the Bank 2010, I think, maybe?
Yeah.
That'll be it.
It's three Manias?
Yeah, because he was with Edge at 11, and he missed 12, and he missed last year's as well.
Last year stung, too, because I think he was ready to come back, and they were like,
yep.
Just hang on. And then the year, before that, he was...
2009?
Sorry?
Was he on 2009? Was he back at the stage?
That was his... He was... Yeah, his whole WWE return has been two Money in the Banks, and then he was injured, came back to Corner Edge. He was injured and kicked out of Team John Laurinaitis, and he was injured and held off TV last year.
Damn. Too ugly for SME.
What about the big guy? Where does he fit in?
It's a big guy with the big splash as he comes back down.
I would be happy to take another Ryback Sheamus match. Just give
that
him 8 minutes
ruled.
And let them beat the shit out of each other. I'm fine with that.
That match,
yeah.
Ruled. I mean, I don't think
it was a good match.
In fact, no, I go one better. Ryback for the whole of WrestleMania, every match, just he's at music hits. He comes out, he walks around the ring, and he leaves
with his swagger.
Or even put Ryback on the panel.
I'm fine with the Rybacksel tag team. I think they're a perfectly acceptable mid-card tag team. And if they are one of the teams in a tag team four-way or six-way or whatever, I'm fine with that.
Actually, yeah, you know what's funny is we think we know at this point, barring a shake-up, the big four matches, which are the ones they've always been saying, except with Brian slid in for Punk. And then a Shield breakup match, whether it's a three-way or something else, and a Cody Goldust match. So you're up to six. There's maybe one more match.
No, it'll be more than how many matches we have last year? 8 or 9, wasn't it?
Of any length, though. And I guess a pre-show match too. But so good luck, AJ versus whoever Total Divas winner is.
Well, to answer my own question, the guy I'm shipping for is Antonio Cesaro. He wasn't on the card last year. I really hope him being in the chamber is the start of a little bit of a run for him to get him. Maybe Mania's going to come too soon for it, but I hope he gets on there in some note. Whether it... I feel like both the US title and IC title are going to be tied into the Shield. I just get that kind of feeling, but could be wrong on that. If not, and Big E still has the belt, I think Antonio Big E would be a perfectly acceptable, which belt's that, IC? Yeah, IC title match. I'd be fine with that. Even if he's still with Swagger at that point and you do those guys in the tag team turmoil and Antonio gets to shine quite a bit, then I'd take that as like the worst case scenario. I just really hope he gets on the card and gets some kind of exposure at Mania this year.
Agreed.
Let's talk Elimination Chamber and the big six-man tag, Shield versus Wyatt's. Amo, if I was to tell you the forces of the Wyatt family and the Shield are going to collide, what? Apparently on a hill.
No.
They're going to collide on a hill. It's going to be a knockdown, drag-out fight.
What kind of hill?
A beautiful one, actually. There was, to reference this for you, Amo, there was a promo where Brody Lee, Luke Harper, spoke his first words in WWE in the middle of a Wyatt family promo. Huh?
Yeah. Continue.
I was going to drop a Carano reference, but he was going to be lost on that as well.
He told the Shield, "You've picked a beautiful hill to die on." So yeah, they're going to fight the hill, and it's beautiful.
Run!
But if I was to tell you about this, where would you lay your hat? On which side of the tracks? The Wyatt?
Tracks.
Are you a Wyatt guy?
You can't run a
shit on them.
You are the train expert. So I will
go through the hill.
Yeah.
Am I laying my hat on which side?
Yeah, where are you laying your hat? Are you a Shield guy or a Wyatt guy?
I think I'm a Wyatt guy.
Ooh, grown the beard?
A real Wyatt guy, eh?
um, So would you be? Would this match sound like something which you would, if you weren't doing this show and you were just hearing about these guys gonna have this this knockdown drag out brawl 6-man tag? Would that be something which you think would be tempting you to watch more than most things?
Heck yeah! Is it not a WrestleMania thing then? No.
Nope. Stream rules.
Nope.
Nope. Elimination Chamber.
Yep.
Is it in a chamber, or is it?
No, it's not the chamber, but they're promoting it as a. It doesn't sound like it's going to be just a 6-man tag, two guys on the apron style orderly affair. It's being promoted like it's going to be a real fight.
Ooh.
Donnybrook, yes. I kind of hope they add like no DQ to it before the show.
Are they still? They're both baddies, though, aren't they? Both teams.
They are, like but they come with very different attitudes. And the Shield, you should watch the promos, Amo. The promo, Mark, fill them in on what the promo's been like, because I know you're a big fan.
They did have the aforementioned promo that Alan was talking about on SmackDown. Just the lights are out, and you've got the Shield in the ring, and there's a spotlight on them, and they're looking up. And I kind of felt like they were playing a little bit off of the Shield's sort of original promos, in that each guy was having something to say, and I think that's why you had Harper and Rowan have a line each. But there was just the last bit after Harper says about the beautiful hill, and Rowan comes onto the screen with the sheep mask on, and he just, in a real kind of deep voice, just shouts or just says, "Run." And I got a Slipknot vibe from it. It was pretty freaky, and I enjoyed it. And I was hoping that it would kind of, you know, lead into a Slipknot song or something, just to sort of mix things up. But it was fun. It was good. And they just, each week they're kind of promo on each other, and they're just a bunch of badasses and fucking hopes, because they're just going to go in and it's going to be a slobber knocker, and it's going to be awesome.
I've wanted to see this match even since before they did that thing where they all faced off around Survivor Series time. But I didn't think, when things kind of started going the direction they were going, with Bray with Cena and Shield split up tease, I was like, oh well, not going to happen. And then all of a sudden they did that angle at the end of Raw, and you were looking at where pieces fell, and you were like, oh my god, they've just built up the Shield versus the Wyatt. And then on SmackDown, they confirmed that, and Shield challenged them, and they got their match, and they confronted Triple H to do it. I think definitely of the two groups, the Shield are the more babyfacey, just because they've got Roman Reigns, who's like the crowd are really behind now, and they've got Seth, who's like kind of this. Seth's kind of this kind of lovable figure, and he really tries hard, and he's kind of tries to keep the peace and all this. He seems like a nice enough guy. Aside from the fact that he seems like a dick that wants to hurt people.
Wasn't that the perfect layout at the Rumble, how Seth tried to stop Dean from eliminating Roman, and Roman didn't
know? It was beautiful. Whoever's been responsible for the little things in all those like little angles those guys have been doing with each other deserves an award, because it's like, we always get on WWE for not having the ability to be subtle with things. The subtleties of this whole angle have been out of this world. Like, some of the best subtle storytelling I've ever seen in wrestling. It's been great.
I want to throw this idea out to you, that this is the match where they have the Shield break up, and that probably wouldn't work if they actually go ahead and do the no DQ ruling. But if they played it out as just a straight 6-man tag match, I could see a scenario where Rollins and Ambrose turn on Reigns, on the basis that, you know, he's getting over with the crowd, and it's not about, you know, it's not all about believing in the Shield. He's believing in himself or whatever. And
I think at this point now, they've really got a 2-month window where it could happen at any time, and I think it will be perfectly fine. I think there was, when they initially started the tease back at around Survivor Series, back in October, November, you kind of got the impression maybe it was coming really early, and it was like, okay, that's going to happen too soon. But now we're at the point where they've held off, and they've kept it at a nice steady pace, and if it happens at the chamber or right after the chamber and then have it build towards Mania, but Roman Reigns is the face and he can come out at Mania without his black cargo gear, freaking debut his new WrestleMania gear, his new look, his new babyface look, all that jazz. If you wanted to do that route with it, that would be fine. If you want to keep them together, just keep sowing the seeds of the breakup, and then either at Mania, have them in a match where it's like, okay, we're having this, it's like the Rumble. Okay, we're in this match, we're going to go against each other, but at the end we'll still be united. And have Roman Reigns win, and then the next night on Raw, have the other two turn on him, or however you want to do it. That would work too.
Would we all be in agreement, though, that the Wyatts should win that match?
Oh, yeah. They're going to, especially if Bray's going with Cena.
Yes, Oh, please go ahead.
I was going to make a very throwaway and stupid comment, but I will anyway. I think the Shield should break up over which one has the wettest hair.
I think Reigns will win that one then. Actually, no, Ambrose is pretty
slick.
Think about it. Those are three sets of wet hair, gentlemen.
Yeah.
Ambrose made a comment about the wet hair on commentary recently, didn't he?
Shield's hair is all wet, and then the Wyatt's hair is all falling out.
This is true.
I feel like that should be the focus of this feud, right? Is envy.
Well, Seth, as far as hair goes, Seth, who ironically is the one member of the Shield with a beard, although it's not like Wyatt family level beard, he said they were going to beat the beards off the Wyatt family. I enjoyed that one.
I was going to agree with you. I really thought like they'd so lost the plot on their direction that this match was going to like fall through the cracks because the Shield breakup and the Daniel Bryan brainwashing was going on at the same time that I figured they just weren't going to find a way to do it. I think it's lost a little bit of intrigue since the direction the two teams are going. You kind of the finish of Bray pinning somebody due to miscommunication is pretty obvious, but I'm just really happy, like you, that they're managing to fit the match in. I wish it was the WrestleMania match, but
We're getting great promos and great build, and we're going to get, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of great action before a probably predictable finish. So
I will say now you've kind of said it, because I had a few ideas about where they could go with the Shield, but I think the idea of them having a match of some sorts at Mania and then the next night be the one to turn Reigns, because in front of that Raw crowd, that's probably the place you'd want to do that.
Do you turn them on him or him on them?
Them on...
Because if you turn them on him, he has to be laid out on the first... They can't turn and beat him up, and then he makes the comeback and beats them up and gets the big crowd pop. That's too much happening. It's like, yeah, there's nothing then to root for. So, but if it's that Raw after Mania where him beating up them, like, see, it would have to be a kind of a thing. See, that's where the Rollins issue is kind of awkward, because if they're going with the route of Rollins and Ambrose staying heel and being a team, and which I'm fine with, and you have the whole thing of okay, it clearly looks like Ambrose could stab Rollins or stab Reigns in the back, and it's coming, and then Seth stabs him in the back too, and the two of them beat him down. That seems like a natural direction for this, but you can't have, if you're gonna have Seth stay heel, you can't have Roman be the guy who is Ambrose is treating like shit, and he just gets right up in his face and cleans his clock and he turns up. Then where does that leave Seth? That's just
my idea was that you could have both Rollins and Ambrose turn on Reigns at Elimination Chamber, and then you could build up to a tag match at Mania, and you'd have Rollins and Ambrose versus Reigns and whatever other person you wanted to have, and then the key
Ray
potentially
keep it the or team.
Yeah, could do. But the key idea...
Didn't they do a thing where...
They did. They
like, give Ray a nod?
Survivor Series. Yeah. But the key thing being that Reigns pins Ambrose in that match, and then you build up to the next pay-per-view, or even if you want to do it next night on Raw, you have a US title match, or if they've unified the titles, or whatever. Because I was thinking about this earlier, like, if they do turn Reigns face, what are they going to do with him? Because I think it would be too early to do anything with him with the WWE belt. But if you keep him winning, well, you can't. You don't want him to be in the title picture because then you have.
Oh, I think you have him feud with Ambrose and Rollins.
Well, hopefully, because otherwise you sort of have the Ryback scenario, which you don't really want. But if you put the US title on him, that gives him something to work with for the rest of the year.
You can give him the US title and you can have him fend off a rematch with Ambrose, have him fend off Rollins in a singles match, then other people from outside the Shield, and just tag matches with Ambrose and Rollins. You just, I think you can keep him in that circle of things as a babyface for really the rest of the year, and then maybe have him win the Rumble next year and go on to Main Event Mania and title match and have him win the world title. Again, I go back to that Samoan San Francisco thing, but he's definitely a Florida guy, and really his only sort of connection to San Francisco would be that's where a lot of his family kind of came to when they settled in America or whatever. And so it's not really that huge of a thing. But still, I think next year will be the time for him to win the title at Mania. So that covers really the Shield stuff. Before we quickly wrap it up, we got the six men in the Elimination Chamber. Because I guess we have Elimination Chamber in 2 weeks, so I'd say our next show on this journey, on this voyage, will be maybe after the Raw, after the Chamber. We could maybe do something then. Seems like a good time.
And Network then, night.
Yeah.
I have a question about the network.
Yes.
Will this show be available to download on the network?
To be determined, AMO.
How soon? I mean, I know we have contracts to renegotiate, but how soon?
I have a phone call with Sky, and I have a phone call with Joe Duffy, actually, in the next couple of days.
To be fair, there are, like, rights issues, because, like, the WWE Network doesn't have When Worlds Collide because of the WCW sort of AAA deal, and between Dr. Heave Presents and Faces Radio, there's some contractual obligations there that you need to work through as well. So I think it'll be fine.
I'll be blacking out your voice.
Awesome.
Be a long period of silence.
This is Great. The Undertaker's wife, Sarah. Who was that?
That was DDP, I believe. No, big shocker. The Elimination Chamber, since we won't be talking about the actual match itself until after it's happened, how do we see that thing going?
Five people get eliminated, Randy Orton wins.
I think it has to come down to Brian and Randy, because Cena will, of course, get kidnapped by the Wyatts again.
Do you want to have that direct Daniel Bryan screwed in the main event finish again, though?
That was my next thing, is you're going to... Sorry.
Part of me thinks we should be getting rid of him earlier in the match. Not early in the match, but like, he shouldn't be in the last two. But then you have the Rumble thing of, will people turn in the last two if he's not in it?
Yes.
Well, have that just before Brian gets in the cage, have that maybe Triple H attacks him, and that's where you want to set up for Mania.
Yeah. Well, I think you want him in the match, though.
I think that needs to be the climax. I know it's one screw job too many, but since it's the last time before...
Yeah, and it seems like the lesser of two evils as far as that.
And at least if it's the last screw job, but this is the one where... Well, it kind of comes full circle, because the first screw job was at the hands of Triple H, and this can be the last one at the hands of Triple H. And so, obviously, next time, you have the match.
There you go. Yep. And because,
Antonio Christian... Sorry. Antonio Christian... Orton, Cena, Sheamus, and Brian.
Zero chance Brock Lesnar's in this match. They're not going to put him in a six-way. They're not going to unadvertise him, and they're not going to put him in a match he can't win.
Yeah. I think we'll save talk of Brock Undertaker completely for the next show, because I don't see how they're getting there from this point, so there's not much to talk about, but I'm sure we'll have some more to talk about in that soon. But
Because he went, my client, Brock Lesnar, wants a shot at the title, and they said no. And then they said, my client, Brock Lesnar, wants a shot at the number one contender, Batista, and they said no. And then my client, Brock Lesnar, pitched a fit and beat up a bunch of dudes, so I assume next time he'll be like, all right, well, then we want the next biggest thing.
You're not putting enough emphasis on the words Brock and Lesnar.
I'm very ill, and I can't. My voice is
The thing is, though, and I'm sure this could be easily ignored, it wasn't on TV, but on a big interview with Heyman on the website a while ago, he talked about how... Oh, wait, was that actually even on TV.com, or was that something
else? They all merge into one at this point.
Yeah, I was... It was... no, but, I mean, it was would have actually been a non-WWE thing, but he was talking about how... Brock Lesnar had no interest in The Undertaker, and Brock Lesnar was interested in proving, interest in, like, history and kind of landmark things like The Undertaker's streak. That was of no interest to him, so I'm sure that could easily be forgotten about when he said that.
Even Brock wanted to see Cena versus Undertaker.
The opening of... Justin, you will not rest until you get that Cena Taker match at WrestleMania. I'm shocked it hasn't happened yet. Like, God, it really... Surely next year, sure. But the opening two of the Chamber, I think we have some good options there for an opening two. Bryan and Cesaro would be a really good way to open it. Bryan and Sheamus would be a really good way to open it. Orton having to run the gauntlet from the start would be good. Christian, you could put in there with anyone. It's as far as like wrestlers go. Is it one of the most loaded chambers as far as talent ever?
Yeah, definitely.
People are kind of sleeping on that.
Aside from Ziggler like getting in for no reason, I couldn't have been happier with the two guys they chose to round it out.
Yeah, Sheamus has been awesome since he came back.
Sheamus is awesome. I feel sometimes he is. It feels like he's underrated, even though he's pushed as a upper tier guy. But I still think sometimes he comes across as underrated. But I think he's been awesome pretty much since.
He dropped a bunch of weight when he was champion, and then all of a sudden he started having these really awesome matches.
Yeah, his promo work can sometimes still be a little bit forced. But in terms of his in-ring stuff, Sheamus is awesome.
He hasn't done much. It's been all in-ring since he came back. Has he even spoken?
He said fella, maybe.
Fella! Brogue. I like it in the Rumble when they node his brogues.
Yes.
Honestly, I expected more no chance, but people just booed.
Yeah.
I think I started...
It's a lot easier to boo than try and get in sync and say no.
That is true. I believe, I mean, I can't confirm this, I think I started the no chant at the end of the Royal Rumble. I was like, hey guys, let's do no, and it cut off. Here's this old chestnut.
I picture Justin saying it after like a bunch of kids sitting in
this
section.
This is the second time I've been on a show with you, Justin, and we've discussed your sort of crowd interactions, because I remember you talking about booing the Black Eyed Peas at the Super Bowl.
Yes, 100%. This was that reincarnate, because it was the same thing. Things weren't going the way I wanted. It was just time to take a stand.
I respect you for that, brother.
I'm not a big booer, and I mean, the Penguins and Steelers... I never, like, boo, you're playing poorly and losing, I'm upset. So it's the only two times I've really booed outright were the Black Eyed Peas, and then poor Dave Bautista.
Where was that Super Bowl that the Steelers...
That was in Dallas, Texas.
Huh.
Generally a hot market.
Guys, we should wrap this up for today's part of the voyage. It's been a great start to the journey. Before we go, I want to say, guys, I've really appreciated you all joining me here. And to reward you, sandwiches weren't the only thing I brought. If you look down, there's a cooler filled with Magnum ice creams, which if you go to Tesco right now, you get 16 Magnum ice creams for €4. It's Magnum Mania, they're calling it.
What? That's ridiculous. Yeah. Does it include white Magnums?
It's every box. The boxes are 8. It is 8 in a box, Amo. €2 for a box. You get white Magnums, double caramel, almond, and classic.
I love almond.
Two of each, €8. Or sorry, €2 for 8. Amazing deal. It's Magnum Mania running wild.
So we go to Tesco and we put in the code Alan4L.
Put in the code DKP and
wow.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Did we all see the Stone Cold advertisement, King of the Rings?
Yes.
And yet, as brilliant as it was, overshadowed in my eyes by your favorite WrestleMania moment,
yes.
Really drawn.
Yes. Yes.
Wait, just finish that there? I didn't.
Your favorite WrestleMania moment, crudely drawn, Stone Cold Steve Austin, flummoxed by the damn click.
I didn't see this. I don't check that thread. I really should, because whenever I have...
It's two things. He didn't know what to do.
Is this a sticky thread?
No, it's up there. It's not hard to find.
Crudely drawn... You peep that new Babinsack? Is that
the one? No? Also a classic.
That is a classic thread. Our colleague, Joseph Babinsack.
I haven't peeped any new Babinsack in a while. Is there a new Babinsack to peep?
Presumably.
He keeps it. He's a good content provider.
Steel City, him and me. Holding it down, journalism-wise, here for the wrestling business.
Mick Foley throwing a brick through his TV. I got that.
You're getting there.
Daniel Bryan, Tier, and Batista giving a finger.
Oh, my God.
How great. Oh, no, it's not actually Daniel Bryan. It's like
it's the fan Bryan. Dave flipped off at the end of the show.
That picture of Dave Batista in his bed with his glasses on, just giving a finger, that was the highlight of my week. I don't get the one of Hogan's sunglass having the phone.
I think that's a tweet.
Yeah.
A tweet from at the real Hulk Hogan.
Okay, here we go. He's on the toilet. He's got his watch on. He's playing with his watch.
I'm not sure. What? I don't think he knows whether to wind it.
Oh, he's shitting. He doesn't know where to shit or wind his watch. Oh, that's tremendous. Oh, God.
It contains multitudes, because in one sense, I feel like this curtain call situation has so confounded him that he doesn't know whether to shit or wind his watch, or it's a history lesson, and Austin was so preoccupied with the question, watch winding v shitting, that he missed the curtain call, and that's why he started this podcast, to get all the information about it.
It's like the ball in the groin. It works on so many levels.
God. That's too good. Okay, well, I hope some part of this show was as entertaining to you listeners as that image is. Was the guy who posted, the guy who created it, Agent Gig?
As best I can tell.
I think so.
If so, well done, Agent Gig, well done. But I hope everyone enjoyed this show. We'll be back for more. How do you like it? Very, very soon as well. In 2 weeks after Elimination Chamber. So
we need more games and sea shanties to involve Eamon, or else he's going to dive overboard or something.
Yeah, I know. Eamon, we'll use your talent. Sure. Maybe you could draw a cock on the boat.
I'll give him my copy of Assassin's Creed 4, because that fills both voids then. It has sea shanties in it.
Everyone. Thanks for joining me, and everyone, thanks for listening. and we'll be back very soon. Tack.
Go.
Bye.
Reflections in the waves spark my memory. Some happy, some sad. I think of childhood friends and the dreams we had. We lived happily forever, so the story goes. But somehow we missed out on the part of gold.